Welcome to my podcast on Count Basie and Riff Style. So we've been talking about the great black bands of Harlem and the issue of where the big bands came from during the Depression. The more you think about it, the stranger this seems. Why, when times are rough and there's a depression, did the bands get bigger? An even stranger question is, why did it become a national craze? Remember, in the 20s, jazz was a virus. It was a sickness. It was infecting people. This idea of Africanization of America was seen as a disease, something terribly negative. But by the end of the 40s, we have the music has changed its name from jazz to swing. It's redefined an age, and it's become America's music, something that represents American democracy. How did this happen? How did jazz go from being a virus to being America's music? We'll come back to that in the next podcast. But first, we have to understand something of what I call the big band problem. If you remember in Chicago style, we had a small band. We had a rhythm section of guitar or piano, bass and drums. And then we had three instruments in the front line. We had a trumpet, trombone, and a clarinet. Now in a big band, each of these three frontline instruments becomes a section. So instead of having one trumpet, we have three or four trumpets in a trumpet section. Instead of having one trombone, we have three or four trombones in a trombone section. And instead of having one clarinet, we've now got three, four, even five saxophones in a reed or saxophone section. So in Chicago or New Orleans, when you only had three guys, they could all improvise at once. And we talked about that before. The trumpet plays the melody, the trombone fills in the harmony, and the clarinet kind of ornaments around both of them. But you can't have 12 or 13 musicians doing that all at once. You just have cacophony. You just have madness. So what's the problem as the band gets bigger? Okay, the problem's not too hard to define. The problem is that you've got too many people to have improvising all at once. What happens is that there really are two different types of solutions that arise. We've already talked about one solution. The first solution is the New York solution, Fletcher Henderson solution, which is to write down parts for a band of musicians who read music and only have a select number of people who improvise. So in lots of these big bands, you've got one or two soloists per section. So Fletcher Henderson hires Louis Armstrong to come play in his band and be the star soloist. Paul Whiteman hires Bix Beiderbecke to come be the star soloist in his band. So that's one solution. You take a bunch of guys who read, you write out the arrangements in advance, and then you bring in somebody who maybe doesn't read, like Louis Armstrong, doesn't read well, who come in and just point at him and say, okay, now's the time to solo, and the music gets jazzy when you have your soloist. But in Kansas City, what was then called the Southwest, a different style arises, and we call this riff style. So Kansas City was also a hotbed of music, and no surprise, also run by gangsters, the Pendergast Machine. So there's plenty of nightlife and work for musicians right through the Depression. Lester Young, Charlie Parker, Ben Webster, and Count Basie all come out of Kansas City. Here you're listening to Benny Moten's Kansas City Band with the pianist Bill Basie, as he was then known, at the piano. This is from the mid-20s. In riff style, everybody can solo. Everybody's a jazz player, and nobody really has to read music. Your lead player, the first trumpet or the first trombonist, simply starts playing a riff, and everybody else starts to play along. So, for example, if the saxophone's lead player starts playing well, you just join him. Of course, the first night, this is a little tough. You don't know what's going to come next. But once the band has been together for a while, you immediately pick up on the clue, and somebody only has to play beep boo dee, and you know the rest of the riff. So one thing you can do is have one section play a riff, while a soloist from a different section plays the solo, like this. So can you hear that the soloist is the tenor sax, and the riff is in the background in the trumpets? Then the next soloist is a trombone, and the riff is in the saxophones. So that's basically how riff style works. So let's listen now to the entire 1 o'clock jump from 1937, one of the most famous riff style pieces. It wasn't in fact written down at all until the late 1930s. The band just learned it and could play lots of different versions of it. It's essentially a series of solos with riffs from contrasting sections. Let's listen. It's a blues, by the way. If you want to go back and listen over and over again, you can hear the 12-bar chorus. Each soloist gets one chorus. Well, except for Basie. It starts with Count Basie playing the piano and his rhythm section with Walter Page on bass, Joe Jones on the drums, and Freddie Green on guitar. You've heard this before. This is Herschel Evans playing the tenor sax with the riff and the trumpets. End of the chorus, coming up here. Now, Lester Young on tenor sax, but notice the riff and the trumpets. Then Buck Clayton on trumpet. Find the riff and the saxes. And then back to Basie. Notice that great 4-4 chug of the rhythm section. So how do you end a piece like this? With more riffs, of course. This time, without a soloist. You've got saxes playing one riff. Another riff from the trumpets. Then you change riffs. There's the famous riff. And the saxes keep playing that. And the trumpets keep playing their riff. Famous riff, you know, again. Can you pick out each section? Trumpets, trombones, and saxes. There's the trombones. Just ends. Think of how wonderful this is as a strategy for playing for dancers. First of all, you can look out at your dancers and you can feel how they're doing, see how they're doing, and see where the piece wants to go. And you can make adjustments. If you want to bring it down, you bring it down to back to a piano solo and you bring it down a little bit. As the riffs get louder and you get more energy, the dancers are going to get more energetic and wilder. And to end the piece, you simply combine riff on top of riffs until you've got the most energy going, and then you just end. So these pieces were modular in a sense. They could be put together in lots of different ways, but they relied upon outstanding soloists, and Count Basie had several. Perhaps his greatest soloist was Lester Young, one of the great soloists in jazz between Louis Armstrong and Charlie Parker. Lester Young was an important new soloist with a light sound, almost without vibrato, very light accents, a kind of lean, economical style. It was fluid. It didn't have a great range like Louis Armstrong did. And if you compare him to Coleman Hawkins, who you've already heard, who had a kind of arpeggio style, Lester Young, or Prez as he was known, saves his jumps for special moments. He plays more melodically and tends to stay in a single zone. This is Lester Young playing with Count Basie on Oh Lady Be Good. Listen now to how he takes an idea and works it. Here it is. And again. It's almost like he's playing a riff. And here again, he plays with almost a single note. So that's Lester Young, also known as Prez. As you listen, start listening for soloists' style. So listen to Lester Young and think about what it is that identifies it as Lester Young, the sound of the saxophone, the way he plays. Then listen to Coleman Hawkins and compare the two. So that's Count Basie and the Southwest riff style. Basie took over the Benny Moten Band in 1935 in Kansas City, when Moten died of a botched tonsillectomy. He increased the size of the band to 4 trumpets and 3 trombones, and he created one of the world's great rhythm sections, with Walter Page playing bass, Joe Jones on drums, and Freddie Green playing the guitar. With Count Basie playing in a new style with a left hand, because he had such a strong rhythm section, he didn't have to keep striding the bass, and he could simply add rhythmic juice to the band by these little plinkety plinks and this use of space. His greatest soloist was Lester Young, and while the band eventually did learn to read and play charts, it started off as a riff band playing mostly the blues and playing in this style that we call riff style. We'll do more in class. But the advantage of the podcast is that you can go back and keep listening to the riffs and listen to the 1 o'clock jump so you can pick out which section is playing the riff and who's got the solo. Have fun!